Welcome to this podcast of Sunday nights on ABC Local Radio. I hope you enjoyed the program.
Victor Malarek's a Canadian journalist. He's written a couple of books and won a couple of awards on one of the world's burgeoning industries, the global sex trade, almost as big as the global drugs industry. You better believe it. Just after we recorded this interview, it was announced in Canada that that Victor's latest reporting effort for Canadian television W5 has just won the Canadian Association of Journalists Award, that's equivalent of our Walkley, for an investigation into police killings in Canada. So, Victor Malarek, a guest with some expertise over wide areas, talking about his research into the global sex trade.
Victor Malarek, welcome to Sunday Nights.
Well, thanks for the invitation.
Now, Victor, the reason we have you here is because you've been pursuing a trail that many people regard as a sort of offstage issue when they're looking at it from the Australian perspective. That is, with the fall of the Soviet Union a long time ago now and the resultant economic chaos that was created, there was a huge wave of difficulty with sexual exploitation of women, particularly waves of people flooding across Europe into Britain. Numbers of stories about the sex trade, but you're suggesting that that sex trade and the chaos resulting from that flowed over into other countries and got as far as Australia, and that countries such as Australia have to be concerned just as European countries do. You've had two books, The Natashas on the Global Sex Trade and The Johns, Sex for Sale and the Men Who Buy It. What first sparked your interest?
Well, I've always been a reporter who's really concentrated on and is mostly taken by human rights issues, social justice issues. And, you know, as a young reporter, I started looking at issues involving the abuse of children in care of the state, and also looking at battered women and battered women shelters and trying to rescue women out of situations that were way out of their control. Back around 2000, I started to read some Wire stories about this issue of women being trafficked from places like Ukraine and Romania, Moldova and Russia. And I was wondering, what is that all about and how bad is it? And that's how I got involved in the trafficking issue. I started to go around and travel to places like Greece and Germany, England, the Netherlands, all the way to Tel Aviv, and then into other countries in Central and South America, and then over into Thailand and places like that, and seeing the absolute devastation of these young women that are forcibly trafficked into the flesh trade around the world. And it shocked me to my core.
You mentioned very briefly the Eastern Europe and the orphanages in Eastern Europe. And this is more than just the sex trade. It goes back to the state and the condition that many of those orphanages were in. Many people will recall Romania after the fall of the Ceausescu's and the horrific state of the orphanages in that country.
Yeah, you know, and when that social safety net of the Soviet Union dropped, you know, and the social safety net in the Soviet Union used to be cradle to grave. You knew that you were basically going to be taken care of from cradle to grave. But the Iron Curtain collapses and the social safety net disappears. Jobs were, you know, unemployment was huge and alcoholism and abuses were huge. All of a sudden, thousands and thousands of women and mothers started to abandon their children because there was nothing for them. They abandoned them on the steps of orphanages. In Ukraine, for example, there's 75,000 children in orphanages. In Russia, it's upwards of 1 million children abandoned to the care of the state into these institutions called internats. Now, nothing happens in these places for these kids. They're basically warehouses, very Dickensian in the way that these kids are controlled. And when they come out at 16 and 17, when they age out, they just simply go out into the world with nothing except the clothes on their back. They have no skills. Most of them can't even boil water. What's happened when the traffickers found out about these young girls being, you know, released at 16 and 17, they hang out at the gates of these institutions, oftentimes with the tip-off from certain staff members or directors or assistant directors, and these girls are scooped up and trafficked into the flesh trade around the world or domestically within Ukraine and Russia. And the sad reality for these girls is everyone knows that they were in an institution, but after they leave, they disappear into this ether. And I'm finding now that the government doesn't know where 25 to 50% of these girls are. They've just disappeared.
To what extent is that problem at source, that is the difficulties with the orphanages and the difficulties of those state institutions, being dealt with by the rebuilding of institutions back in the Soviet Union? That is the program, is the problem beginning to be dealt with at source?
No, it's a lot of political lip service, but I got to tell you, the corruption and the depth of corruption in Russia and places like Ukraine and Moldova are so huge, and you know, that children in these institutions really don't matter. You know, I get so angry when I hear these people say, well, children are our future. They are the most precious of precious. And yet they still allow these children to rot in these places. You know, the Iron Curtain came down, you know, 15 years ago. And this god-awful stuff is happening and nothing has changed. I was just in Ukraine a month ago looking at a number of the orphanages and nothing has changed. Hundreds of kids in each one of them and their lives are absolute misery. You look at, I was in a baby orphanage where nine little babies were dropped off on Christmas Day. There were 280 little babies and toddlers in this one place. And I kept thinking, you know, by the time they go to the older orphanage, their whole trail in life is going to be one of, you know, just a dark corridor that opens up into, I don't know what misery they will face when they hit 17, 18, and 19.
You're on Sunday night on ABC Radio Around Australia. John Cleary with you. We're talking with Victor Malarek, author of The Natashas, The New Global Sex Trade, and its sequel, The Johns, Sex for Sale and the Men Who Buy It. Victor Malarek, you're suggesting that this wave of expulsions from the orphanages continues to flood across Europe and then into the wider world. I guess the current economic instability doesn't help that situation at all. It simply sort of adds to it. When you look at what's going to be happening in Greece, the tightening of money supply around the world, the difficulties that economies in Eastern Europe are suffering from, you don't see this problem being dealt with at all, in any way, at source. We've mentioned the orphanages, but you're saying it's actually, rather than abating, it's growing?
Oh, yeah. The worse the situation, the worse the desperation. You see more and more families who find themselves unable to take care of these children. You know, a lot of the men abandon their responsibility and leave their wives, you know, with two, three, four children, and she doesn't know what to do with them. She may be pregnant, and the next one just goes immediately into the orphanages. You see two, three kids in each of these orphanages that are brothers and sisters. They don't know where their mother is anymore. They don't know who their father is. And as the economy gets worse, the situation of dumping the children gets exponentially worse. And then you know that their lives in these places are just, you know, going to be bleak.
What happens with regard to state controls of just borders and customs, though? Surely, given the amount of alarm over this issue over the last 10 years, border controls are being sort of beefed up on these sorts of issues.
Well, you know, along the green border, the open green border between the EU and those former Soviet countries, this is very porous. You can get in and out. But the amount, again, of corruption at the people at the borders, the customs officials, the immigration officials, is huge. I mean, you show them a few, you know, dollars here and there, and they don't make that much money. So they will turn a blind eye. And you're talking about societies that are so misogynistic that they don't really care about these young women. They figure, oh, they're just prostitutes or whatever. Who cares? And they let them cross, you know, in a car that's been driven by a trafficker with three, four women in it, and it just goes by. No one says anything because, you know, you get these little handshakes where money has just traded.
Let's just widen it from Europe for a moment. One of the things you suggest is that the corruption or attitudes are deeply embedded not just in source countries, but even into some of the international agencies who are supposed to be dealing with this problem. And one could go, I guess, to conflicts like Rwanda and others and see examples of abuse by UN troops from other African countries. But you're suggesting it's a bit more pervasive than that.
Oh, yeah. You know, when I was in Kosovo and Bosnia-Herzegovina, looking at the issue of trafficked women, we were finding 16 and 17 and 18-year-old girls from Bulgaria, Romania, Moldova, Ukraine, you know, held in basements and cellars and brought up to be used and abused by, believe it or not, these men, these peacekeepers with these sky blue caps representing the United Nations. Now, there were thousands and thousands of these girls in Bosnia and thousands in brothels throughout Kosovo, and always next door to an encampment of peacekeepers, whether they were German peacekeepers, Italian, Australian, Canadian, American, French, you know, they were there. And these peacekeepers knew, unless they were really stupid, that these young girls, these teenagers, were trafficked. And very few of them ever tried to rescue them and bring them to a safe, you know, to a safe house. They were just there for their rest and recreation. Those soldiers did what they wanted to do and left with their conscience clear because they paid money to use and abuse these women. And for these soldiers, it was just a question of a conscience pacifier. I gave money, hey, and I got what I wanted. Nothing to worry about here. But when these young girls were rescued, the stories they would tell about how they were abducted from taking a walk on a rural road in Moldova or abducted straight off of the streets in a city like Kiev or some village, it was really, really shocking right to my core that no one went out there and tried to rescue them and deal with this situation.
You're on Sunday Night on ABC Radio. Our guest is Victor Malarek, investigative journalist and author of The Natashas and the Johns, a look at the global sex trade, particularly as it flows out of the economic conditions in Eastern Europe and in Africa. Victor Malarek, let's talk for a moment then about the money flow and what's going on here. People aren't going to do this. People can be in economic poverty and need money, but you've got to have money coming in from those who want to actually fund and control the trade. How big is this trade and who's putting the money in?
It's huge. The trade is a multi-billion dollar industry, upwards of $20 billion U.S. every year that is made by traffickers because they're moving worldwide about 800,000 women across borders for the flesh trade. But when you look at the kind of money that the traffickers get, because as you go through each of the systems, they can get, you know, $10,000, $15,000 for one of these young women. And if she is really beautiful, that pimp who buys her can make upwards of $250,000 to $300,000 a year off her back. So the trade is really brings in huge amounts of money, all the way from the traffickers and their ability to hand out bribes to officials at various borders and all the way to when these young women arrive in various countries to bribe officials to let them cross the borders. Huge amounts of money involved in this.
Is Australia at the back end of this trade in some ways? I mean, we seem to be in this country a long way away from those issues. And, you know, the most angst you get in Australia is when a few boat people tend to sort of flow down in sort of rusting and leaking boats into our northern borders and hysteria results. So it seems that something as a sort of industrial as that is so remote from our perceptions. And yet you're suggesting it does leak across even into Australia.
Oh, sure. You know, when I'm looking at the back pages of newspapers here and I see Asian escort, Asians here, Asians, you know, exotic Asians, and when you look at the illegal and even legal brothels here and you see them filled with Asian women from Southeast Asia, whether they're Thai, Filipino, Indonesian, or Korean, you can bet your bottom dollar that 100% of them have been trafficked. And to think otherwise is to fool yourself. And here are the reasons why. These women don't speak English. They don't have any communication skills. They don't have the business acumen to set themselves up as independent contractors that will work in a brothel or illegally on the streets. They don't have the money to get to Australia, let alone even find Australia on the map, let alone find Melbourne or Perth or Sydney or whatever. So you know that there has to be some organizations behind them. Those organizations are criminal organizations because once the young women get here, for example, and the trafficker charges the brothel owner, whether it's legal or illegal, or the pimp, $15,000 for the privilege of moving this girl into Perth or Melbourne, that young woman has to service 800 men for free before she sees a penny from the rest of the men that she services while she's here.
Victor Balaric, it seems an extraordinarily sophisticated trade to be allowed to go almost unnoticed. Victor, we've talked a little bit about the origins and source of the sex trade. Let's talk a bit about the consuming countries. Europe and Britain in particular got hold of this issue 3 or 4 years ago, in part because of your earlier work in your first book, the Natashas. I can even recall reading a British crime fiction book which acknowledged at the back of the book credit to you for inspiration for the plot behind the book. And there was, perhaps 4 or 5 years ago, some real attention given to this issue by even dramatic writers for the BBC and others. There were a number of dramas based around the global sex trade. Did that in any way dent the issue or make an impact? You're suggesting no, it's just that was a blip for the moment and it's passed and things go on as normal.
It's... awaken the thought processes of the, you know, the community in general. I don't think anybody really realized that we have a slave trade now that is based on moving women around the world or domestically for the flesh trade. And the numbers involved are truly shocking when you think about 800,000 young women being moved around the world every year, but also to join upwards of 10 million women and children involved in the flesh trade domestically around the world. People never really thought of the scale of this thing. So there is discussion now starting, and I see it more and more in the Western countries where people are saying, what is this all about and why is this being allowed to happen? And challenging, you know, a lot of the thoughts that are out there about the flesh trade and prostitution and the legalization of prostitution and what is really going on in the enslavement and entrapment and the hunting down of so many young women to fulfill this incredible demand that's out there. So there is discussion, but the problem is we have an old boys school attitude that's dealing with this and saying, well, you know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, it's just a bunch of guys being guys. But what these guys being guys are doing is they are fueling a modern-day slave trade of epic proportions.
You're suggesting it's attitudinal in part, in that in the West, because we've become more tolerant of sexual behavior, more liberated, we've actually turning a blind eye to the fact that the abuses we once crusaded against are still going on. We've just taken we continue to take a very laissez-faire attitude.
Yeah, and you know, it goes back to, you know, almost the biblical times where people will say, well, this is a fallen woman. You know, these are harlots and whores or whatever they want to be called, and you know, they are leading hapless family men and businessmen astray, when, you know, no one is really looking at the fact that the vast majority of women have absolutely no choice in what they do. The vast majority are extremely desperate human beings taking desperate measures, and one of the desperate measures to survive is prostitution. But the men who go out and buy and rent these bodies, they're not asking, why is that woman there and how else can I help deal with this issue? These guys go and some of them actually convince themselves that they're helping these women feed their families or whatever. And, you know, these are morons that, you know, you look at them and say, you know, for you, charity begins below the belt. But they're not really thinking it through. These men have got to be held responsible for what they are causing out there and the humiliation and degradation and suffering that is, you know, happening as a result of their activities.
I'd like to talk more a little about the demand side in more detail in a minute or so's time. But before we leave this question of the dimensions of the trade, which countries are of most concern at the moment? Are you saying it's Britain and the USA, Canada, Australia, the rich West, who are ultimately have to take primary responsibility in this issue?
I think the West has to, because it's Western men that are fueling this trade. Now, I think, you know, when you look at some of the worst places on the planet, you look at Japan and Japanese sex tourists. These men really have to be taken to task for what they do on international sex tours. India has a massive problem in the numbers of young women that they entrap and force into prostitution, and yet you never hear about that. Germany imports hundreds of thousands of young women into the sex trade, and right now they've got anywhere between 200,000 and 400,000 young women, of which 87% are not German. They are from Ukraine and from Bulgaria and Romania and Russia, Lithuania, Estonia, Latvia. You know, this speaks volumes to me. So there are all of these Western countries that are receiving these women, but also a lot of these Western countries that are sending out sex tours to impoverished nations because they know that they can use and abuse the women there plus children there and get a heck of a lot more for their dollar.
What about the relationship of the U.S. and Canada to Latin America and Mexico in particular?
Well, you know, you look at North American sex tourists go down by the plane load starting in October during the winter season, from October to about April, to Costa Rica. They go to Colombia. They go to Brazil, where there is a huge, huge sex market of very young women. And they go there specifically to use and abuse them.
You're painting a picture which needs to be analysed really in terms of who we are as people and the judgments we're making. And I'd like to move on to this end of the discussion now, and that is the demand side. What is creating the demand? We touched on it briefly, but let's talk more about that. You see, in most Western countries over the last 15 years, a return in some ways to a sort of raunch culture that was once considered sort of crude machismo, and the sort of wave of feminism in the 60s and 70s and 80s sort of put that in the shade. You're now seeing a return of it for some reason. The sort of men's magazines, very explicit. It's almost seen as an overt expression of feminism by some people in a sort of perverse way, that women have a right to do whatever they want with their bodies. Is that part of the problem we're looking at now, that in some ways we're returning to a perverse dehumanization?
Yeah, you know, and I think a lot of it has to do, and I talked about it in Natasha's quite a bit, was there's a chapter that I wrote called A Click of a Mouse. And the click of a mouse is looking at the internet. And I look at that as the fuse that just exploded this global sex trade and demand. You know, men looking at all of this XXX porn, men getting on the internet and chatting with each other in anonymity of where to buy sex anywhere on the planet, in any town, in any city on the planet, giving photographs and descriptions and costs and maps of how to get to places where they can use and abuse young women.
And this is not just sort of private chat rooms. This is stuff that can be generally accessed by the click of a button by anyone.
By anyone, the World Sex Guide, anybody can access it, and they just give you every nation on the planet, and then they give you every city in those nations and towns in those nations. And these guys chat and chat away about, you know, look what I can get here, look what you can get here when you're on a business trip, or when you're on a, you know, your vacation, or even within your own city, or the city next door to your own hometown. It's wide open field, and what's very rarely discussed is, you know, where's your conscience? Where's your moral fiber? Where's your ethics and your morals? They don't discuss this. They just, it's all about what you can get for your dollar. And it's so wide open. On top of that, you look at the XXX porn, which just pops up all the time and heats these guys up and sends them into the night. And they're not really questioning. Every one of them seems to buy into this fact that these women are in it by choice, that they are in it to make money the easy way on their back, and they all glibly go back to the same cliche that has been around for centuries, that prostitution is the world's oldest profession. And when you really, really look at prostitution as a profession, you realize with all of the suffering and degradation and humiliation that these young women are put through, it is really the oldest oppression of women.
Victor Malarek, an investigative journalist from Canada, author of The Natashas, The New Global Sex Trade, and The Johns, Sex for Sale and the Men Who Buy It. It's a story that first exploded some years ago with the collapse of the Soviet Union and the awful poverty that that resulted from that. Victor Malarek is suggesting that the problem has not gone away. It has simply gone underground and is more sophisticated than ever. Victor Malarek, you mentioned the cliche, prostitution, the world's oldest profession. And indeed, that is part of the problem. Over the last 30 years or so, many countries have said, look, we're now in a situation where prostitution cannot be controlled by law. We have to actually accommodate it in some ways and recognise that it always will be there. You're suggesting that what's happened is rather than control or manage it, what they've done is simply walked away and abandoned the whole area so that now it is open to complete exploitation.
Oh, yeah, it is. I mean, you know, people have... You know, it's a way of dodging your responsibility. You know, you see a problem and it's so big, so you capitulate to the sex industry, or you capitulate to this myth out there that men have always been doing it. You can't really stop it, so let's just give up and, you know, let it be. And they always go back to, well, it's the oldest profession. And I hear that so often, I go, why don't you look at what's been happening for centuries about how marauding armies have gone into villages and towns, raped, pillaged, and plundered, and taken women to be their sex slaves, and then eventually they are labeled as harlots or prostitutes. This is an oppression. You cannot have gender equality in our society and in the 21st century if you continue to buy into the myth and send out these messages to men, and more even alarmingly to boys, that, hey, it's all right to buy or rent a woman's body. It's so bizarre when you think about this thing and say, well, how will you ever, ever achieve gender equality with that kind of thought pattern going on in men's heads?
But that's the prime difficulty, isn't it? The thought pattern in men's heads, to some extent, people would argue, is hardwired. So all you can do is manage it. And the way to manage it is actually to have proper legal controls and health controls on the sex industry. That you can't just simply ban it. It's not going away. So what do you do? You're suggesting that we've sort of just simply walked away. One of the other aspects of it is who you blame. Do you blame the women or do you blame the men? Now, legislative controls over the years have moved backwards and forwards on this issue. 100 years ago, people were suggesting that we need to shift the blame here from women to men. Some countries legislated against that. You're suggesting that those issues have now sort of moved away, that we've moved away from even caring about who's to blame here.
Yeah. And really, you know, the blame is very obvious when you look at it. The vast majority of these women don't want to be involved in it. Upwards of 96% in so many of the countries say, never wanted it in my life, never dreamt of it. I want to escape. There's no avenue for me to escape because I am trapped by desperation and I can't get out of this condition. I can't find a way out. But the people who can make a choice and the people who are causing this because of demand are the three key letters in demand, M-A-N. Men are causing it. Men are the reason this is happening and flourishing around the world, because they're not taking responsibility for their actions.
But are you suggesting prostitution be banned, be made illegal in some sense?
Oh, yeah.
What, completely?
Listen, I don't live in a fantasy world. I know it's never going to evaporate or disappear. But I think we have to send out a message that this is just not the way of the 21st century. It's not the way that we will ever accomplish, you know, having true gender equality between men and women.
But given that's not going to happen in the next 5 or 10 years, what do you propose is the way to begin to get there? What are the first steps in at least controlling the abuses of the trade?
Well, you know, so many countries, including, you know, various states in Australia, have legalized, and they've said, you know, with that legalization, we will protect the safety and health of the women, and we will make sure that these brothels are safe places. Every single place where they have taken this legalization step, the Netherlands, Germany, and the various states in Australia, it has been a colossal, colossal failure. The women do not have safety. The women do not have health protection programs. They do not have the exit programs that were promised to them. They, the regulations are not enforced. In Canberra, I found out that for 5 years, not one inspector went into one of these legal brothels to check out what was going on. And then when they finally took responsibility to investigate a brothel or look at it to see if they were meeting the safety and guidelines or the regulations for health or whatever, they phoned the brothels in advance to tell them, hey, we're coming. Oh, give me a break.
So you're suggesting corruption is going on even at that level in countries like Australia today?
Yeah, you're looking at people who are not... Listen, if you're going to say we're legalizing, then why does the illegal sector greatly, greatly, greatly outnumber the legal sector? What's going on in the illegal trade in this country and in Germany and in the Netherlands is huge, and there are absolutely no protections in the illegal trade. It is the law of the jungle, and the police right on the beat and the vice squads and the politicians are abrogating their responsibility to say, if this is illegal, why is it being allowed to happen? The legal stuff that was supposed to do all these great things to protect the women in the industry is not working, and they know it. They know it 100%, so they're hypocrites in not dealing with
the worst aspect of this is the trade in minors, and that's been the subcurrent of what we're talking about. To what extent is the trade in minors still an issue in countries like Australia and Britain and the USA and Canada?
This is a fallacy that it's that minors are involved. When you look at North America or Australia or the European Union, you see the just locals or whatever are starting into the trade at 14, 13, and 12 years old. Johns are using them. These young women didn't suddenly wake up at 18 and say, wow, what a wonderful and rewarding profession this might be, and I'll enter it. The vast majority enter as teenagers. They are rooked into it, forced into it, because of drug abuse or because of incest in their families and abuses within their families. In places like Southeast Asia, they're sold and bartered into it. In countries like Ukraine and Russia and Romania, they are forced and abducted into it, gang-pressed into it. So you see so many, many people who begin in this industry at ages of 12, and in Southeast Asia, at ages of 6, 7, 8, 9. So this belief that somehow at 18 this epiphany hit these young women is an absolute fantasy world, really a terrible excuse.
But there's been much work done over the last 10 years on child trafficking in particular. Australia has had active movements against it. It's been very active in the USA and the UK. You're mm-hmm. suggesting that those campaigns against child sex trafficking haven't had much weight or much influence?
You hear a lot of people saying, we've got to do something about this. So you hear a raid here and a raid there where they pick up in the United States, Canada, or the UK, or wherever, a couple of 14 or 15-year-olds, and everybody brings the issue to the fore.
Well, what about the legal changes that have gone on, in say, in the Philippines and other countries, like Philippines, Cambodia, other countries known in Southeast Asia as sex trade avenues, Thailand, another one?
Much of that is just floss and gloss because the trade in children continues. It continues virtually unabated. Yeah, they have the odd raid, but I got to tell you, the amount of corruption in Southeast Asia is so huge. And the men, the sex traffickers and the sex tourists are still going there in large numbers using and abusing children. It is happening all the time, and it is flourishing.
Victor Mallory, we're rapidly running out of time. Let's go to what you suggest is the legislative agenda for change. I've suggested that it's impossible to get countries in the present political state to, even with the best will in the world, to ban the sex trade. They're simply not going to do it. The argument is going to take too long to win. Give us some steps in the short term that you think will help at least ameliorate the situation.
Well, one of the things is to really start holding men responsible and taking the criminal aspect away from the women and putting a criminal aspect on the men.
Well, that's been suggested for over 100 years. I mean, the first campaigns on that line were run by Josephine Butler in London in the 1880s.
And it's happening in Sweden today, where they hold men responsible for what they're doing. They arrest the men, they charge the men, and the men have to pay huge fines for, you know, their walks into the night. They find the men, they hold the men responsible, they talk to the men. In North America, they have John schools where they talk to the Johns who have been out there looking for purchased sex. But beyond that, we've got to really start thinking about the message that we keep sending to boys in our society.
Well, it's the Tiger Woods syndrome, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. But we have to look at young boys in our society and start an education process where we talk to them and girls with them at very young ages about gender equality, about relationships, about love, about all of the things that involve sex, and talk about what prostitution is really all about, and that it is, you know, a message that we don't want to see more and more young boys going out there becoming Johns in the future, because what that means is more and more young women are going to be hunted down and entrapped in prostitution and a lifestyle they never wanted in their life, because that's what's really happening out there.
Victor Malarek, it's been good to talk with you. Where do you go next with this crusade? Seems to me it's an issue that you've found as a journalist, which has become a matter for you that is beyond your profession, that there's a personal commitment involved here.
Yeah, you know, all the years that I've been writing about human rights abuses, this one has shocked me to my core. And one of the things that I believe that, you know, an advocate and an advocacy journalist should do is go out there and ring alarm bells. Get the public to wake up and see what is really going on there and start a debate and say, what is it that you want for your society? You know, going around Australia, I've had more people come up to me and say, I don't want this. I don't want to see it in my community. I don't want to see it in my state. I don't want to see it in my country. And yet the politicians don't seem to be listening. And we've got to wake up the politicians and get into a real serious debate about what society wants and also what we can do to get these women out of this with exit strategies and educate men and boys about what the realities, the real realities and tragedies of prostitution are for the vast majority of women entrapped in it.
And one final comment. Some of the groups that have sponsored your visit to Australia are among those who, as part of the community sector, are actually taking the issue seriously by providing safe houses, by providing exit strategies. To what extent is the community sector taking up this issue as an issue much like slavery?
Well, you know, it's happening now more and more, and it's enlightening to me, and you know, I'm certainly very happy about it when I go around and I see more and more organizations right around the Western world saying, hey, we've got to put the brakes on this because this is truly a social justice issue. They know that most of the women, the vast, vast majority of the women, young women caught up in this trade, don't want to be in it, never wanted to be in it. And, you know, they are now being voices going out and saying, listen, we cannot buy into the sex industry argument that this is a choice issue, because in the vast majority of cases, it's not a choice issue. It may be for a minority, but we have to speak for the majority of people and their human rights in the 21st century.
Victor Malarek, great to have you with us on Sunday night.
Thank you for the invitation.